Welcome back to Hacker Slacker. I'm Jacob Petticord.
And I'm Andre Garive.
Today we talked about our hackathon experience over this past weekend with guest Luke Bogus. You'll hear about that after we talk about the news and some follow-up. So I think we're just going to jump right in. First off, last week we talked about this service called Have I Been Pwned, where you can put in your email address and it'll tell you if you've come up in any data breaches. That was just kind of us going off on a tangent. But actually, like, right after we recorded the show, I got an email from them saying that my email and passwords showed up in a data breach.
That's not good.
Yeah, so it was crazy. It's this huge data breach that happened. It was pretty big in the news, but basically it's called the Collection Number One data breach because it was just this huge collection of, I'm going to keep saying huge, of like other breaches and leaks that were all combined together in a big like series of files, and it was just uploaded on some file sharing thing that people were able to find, and security researchers were able to get a hold of. Andre, how about you guess how many unique email addresses were exposed along with my own?
Let's see. I'm gonna guess like a few hundred million.
773 million.
That's a lot.
So 773000000.
So many people.
So yeah, look out for a bunch of fresh spam if you're caught up in this list. And I can't really go over like all the sources that it was from because I don't really know, but I just thought it was crazy that right after we started recording, there was this massive data breach that my email was exposed in.
Yeah.
And I would definitely recommend like just giving the website a check, just because it's good to know if you need to change your password.
Yeah, I'm doing it right now. I'm re-looking up. I looked it up last week on the podcast. I just looked it up again. Still good news. I have not been pwned. So hopefully that means I was not part of this 772,904,991 unique emails.
Yeah. And then another, like, in addition to that, a lot of times when these leaks come out, the passwords are, like, still stored in, like, a secured way so that even though they're leaked in a way that, like, you can't really read them. There were 21 million, like, unprotected passwords leaked. So, I mean, that's 21 million logins that people were able to get a hold of over the period of time, like, before this information was made public. So, if you see, like, some service that you're using, I saw one of them was doing it. I think it was Reddit said that, like, your account's insecure. You need to change your password on, like, every page I was going to. So, it's just like, yep. If you see that, it's probably because of this, and now you know.
Yeah, that's very interesting. I'll have to be checking my spam folder more often to delete stuff.
Yep, fun stuff. Okay, now, so for our first bit of news, a little bit about your company, Google. Yeah. They acquired some IP and hired some people from Fossil's smartwatch division. So Andre, have you heard of Fossil before, first of all?
I have. One of our friends who was one of our TAs last year worked with me at Google this past summer, and he was working on the watch operating system for Android. So he was working on that, and he was working on some of the stuff. So I actually spent some time learning about the actual smartwatches that are offered by Google, and Fossil came up a lot because they have really nice hardware for smartwatches.
Yeah, most people don't know about this, but I guess when I was in the market like looking for just like a nice watch, Fossil's like a moderately priced, pretty modern watch brand, and they actually have these like crazy nice hybrid smartwatches, they call them, where they have like normal faces and then some data is exposed about like notifications and that sort of thing.
Yeah, so they look like classic regular watches that are very high quality watches, but they also have some smart features.
Yeah, so if you just care about like getting notifications and like it monitoring your steps and that sort of thing, and you want it to look nice, they were always like a really solid option. It's like they worked for iOS and Android, but they were pretty top of the line in terms of Android smartwatches. So Google's acquisition of their technology is smart, but people are wondering if this is a sign of a Pixel Watch coming out.
Oh, that would be interesting. I can't really comment much on Pixel because of my insider knowledge. But I personally, I haven't heard of anything like that. But obviously, that would be something very niche and hidden within the company as well. I would love to see that.
It would definitely fill out their lineup, you know, because they have the Pixel Book now and the phone, and then you also need the watch if you're going to do the full
exactly
setup.
One of the big reasons why I'm still considering staying on iPhone is that if I get a new Apple Watch, I shattered my old one about a year ago and I didn't have AppleCare, but if I did end up moving to Pixel, I would really want a really nice smartwatch, and if there were a Pixel Watch, that'd be great.
Yeah, so people are thinking that they're just going to use this technology to kind of further all Android smartwatches. But also, you can draw comparisons to how they hired HTC, or how they bought some HTC technology before they built the original Pixel phone.
Yes, so and I think, then they ended up buying all of HTC.
Yeah, like I think a lot of their like hardcore Pixel lovers are going to be really watching to see what comes out of this.
Yeah, I think it's a great business and hardware decision. $40 million is what the deal is for. It'll be really interesting to see what they do with it.
Yep. Android OS or Watch OS or whatever they're calling it.
Wear OS?
Wear OS, yes, yeah. Definitely has some catch up to do with Apple's system.
Yeah.
So hopefully Google can bring their like next step of the software combined with their own like high quality hardware.
Yeah.
And make a big difference in it. Okay. Yeah. So next, this is kind of a small one, but in their earnings report, Netflix cited their biggest competitor was actually Fortnite and no longer HBO.
That's very interesting because Netflix and HBO spend a lot of money on the exact same stuff, right? They spend money acquiring content and they spend money creating content. Ironically, Amazon spends more on content than both of them. I know you are a big Jack Ryan fan, as I found out last week as I trashed on Amazon Video. Yeah. But yeah, Fortnite, that's interesting.
Yeah, so their motivation of it is saying, like, right now they take up 10% of all U.S. television time.
Yeah.
And so what is really eating into that 10%? You know, like, where is the rest of it going? There's traditional TV, which is obviously a competitor to Netflix. But and there's also HBO, but I mean, what I think is happening is Netflix is crushing HBO in terms of those numbers.
Oh, yeah.
And what they're seeing is taking a huge blip out of the percent of U.S. screen time has been Fortnite.
Like, yeah.
Kids are playing Fortnite a lot. That's not news to anybody.
Yeah.
But no one has really put it in the context of like, oh, this also might be eating into their Netflix watching time.
Yeah, it's really interesting because Fortnite is easily and readily available on every platform that Netflix is.
Yeah.
You can play it on your TV, you can play it on your phone, you can play it on your computer. HBO is usually you use it in one place, right? I don't have HBO because they post Last Week Tonight on YouTube, so that's where I watch it, and that's the only thing I watch in HBO.
Same, actually. Well, and Game of Thrones when that
comes out. I actually haven't watched Game of Thrones, so maybe I need to get into that. But I don't have HBO, but from what I know, most people either just use it on their laptop or just use it on their TV. I don't know too many people that watch HBO on their phones because HBO has such good high-quality content that watching it on a mobile device almost doesn't do it justice.
Yeah, and Fortnite's basically become the new Tetris where it's available on any platform that comes out because it's like the basic thing everyone wants to be able to play.
Yeah.
One thing that this article made me think of was how Netflix recently released Bandersnatch.
Yes, Bandersnatch was amazing.
Yeah, it's like an interactive choose-your-own-adventure episode of Black Mirror. And if you haven't looked at it, you should definitely check it out. I did it with my family over the break, and it was a unique and fun experience. Like, you're kind of, everyone's yelling at which choice they want made. You're trying to figure out what's going on, kind of solving it for yourself.
I watched it completely alone in the dark in a cold room in northern Minnesota at like 1 a.m. So my experience was probably very different from yours.
You probably got a little more of the spook factor.
Yeah, I was just sitting on my phone and it got my heart racing and I was like, wow, this is really quite incredible. So I think Netflix going kind of into a more interactive design with Bandersnatch is another reason why they call Fortnite a competitor.
I mean, it definitely made them unique among the other streaming services.
Oh, like, for sure.
No one else has put out a product like that. And I want to see if, like, now after Netflix did it and it was kind of a success, you're going to see, like, everyone putting out their own crappy version, like, of a choose-your-own-adventure. Like, these, I don't really want to see Hulu's choose-your-own-adventure, you know?
Maybe we'll see some, like, YouTube originals with...
True.
Because it seems like YouTube, they know how to skip to points in the video very easily. It would be interesting to see people who create their own content like that. So, yeah, that'll be interesting.
Yep. And then the last thing is that Uber is rolling out its own airline-style rewards program.
Yeah, this is actually kind of exciting. I really like this. I love using Uber, especially Uber Eats, especially when I'm in, like, a big city. And kind of having a rewards point system is really awesome, but I don't think I'll ever get higher than gold, ever. Yeah. So it goes blue, gold, platinum, diamond. And blue, you just start out with, which is kind of nice. So you just earn points, and then you get a $5 Uber cash rewards for every 500 points that you earn. Points are determined, so when you use Pool or Uber Eats, you get a point for every dollar. When you use UberX, you get 2 points for every dollar, and when you use Premium, you get 3 points for every dollar. So the more money you spend, the higher the multiplier on your points is per dollar that you spend. Takes 500 points to get to gold, 2,500 for platinum, 7,500 for diamond. All of this is unimportant. Basically, you're not going to get diamond unless you're some corporate bigwig that has a company paying for your Uber anyway.
Exactly like airline.
Yeah, exactly like an airline. But some of the really interesting options for rewards that I've seen are price protection between your two favorite places. So if you Uber to work every day,
Or the airport
a lot, you can price protect it. So instead of getting surge pricing, especially like if you are going to an airport a lot, there will be surge pricing if you happen to get there at a very popular time of day. So if you're trying to Uber to LAX at 6 p.m. at night, it's going to be very expensive to get that Uber, but you can price lock it once you've reached the, looks like the gold status, or
platinum
status. And then there's like some flexible cancellations, priority pickup at airports, complimentary upgrades, access to highly rated drivers, which is pretty neat.
Yeah, the highest level diamond, they give you like the highest rated drivers, 24/7 live phone support, some free upgrades, kind of like upgrading your tickets to first class on airlines, and then 3 free Uber Eats deliveries a month, and then basically, what's crazy is that to earn the highest level status, you would need to use around 8 UberXs per week and also use Uber Eats once per week.
Yeah.
That's... it's a lot of points.
Yeah, and it counts based on your last 6 months of Uber purchases. So it will go through your previous 6 months, and it puts you at a status based on that. And it'll be interesting to see if these, like, discounts that you get, like, will end up hurting you because you're spending less money, so then you eventually get knocked down a tier.
Yeah. One thing that I want to see how it plays out is that I think that they're going to start kind of correlating the amount of stars that your driver is with which class of reward system you're in.
Yeah.
So I want to see if, like, maybe if you're in a big city with a lot of people who are maybe going to the airport a lot, maybe only using Uber as their primary source of transportation, who have a lot of high points, if us people who are kind of from the Midwest, we have our own cars because you don't have to Uber everywhere. If people like us kind of start to get worse and worse drivers because the better drivers are reserved for people of higher status.
Yeah, it'll be really interesting. Hopefully we'll get to see it in Seattle this summer.
Yeah, well, so it's not in all, like, it's not available nationally yet, yes, but it's in a lot of major U.S. cities. And then their main competitor, Lyft, they've announced that they're working on a rewards program, but no word on the specifics of it yet.
Yeah, I was looking through the list of cities, and I didn't see Seattle. I don't know if I'm just being blind, but I didn't see Seattle on there at any point, which is really interesting that they would pick all of these big cities, but not what I would consider the second most important tech city in America.
Gettysburg is on there. Like,
yeah.
There's some small ones.
Lehigh Valley. They've got Kansas City.
There we go.
San Francisco. They've got San Diego.
Yeah, I don't
anywhere in New Jersey. The whole state of New Jersey gets it, but Seattle. I don't know if Dara Khosrowshahi has something against Seattle or not, but looks like they're not getting it on the early rollouts.
Yeah, so that's all we have for the news. So we're going to go to a quick break and get ready to listen to our conversation with Luke about our hackathon. And we're back. We're here with Luke Bogus.
Hello, hello. Thank you so much. This is going to be awesome.
Yeah, I'm excited.
Luke Bogus is a classmate of ours. He participated in the Corn Hacks Hackathon with us last weekend. Bogus, you want to give a little introduction about yourself?
Yeah, for sure. Well, you already said my name like four times, but Luke Bogus, I'm a sophomore, marketing and management double major in the race school with both of you, which is fantastic. Yeah, it's kind of interesting. Marketing and management major in a hackathon. I didn't really know I'd fit in that, but I guess I am technically a computer science minor, so technically it fits, but it was an interesting experience, to say the least.
Luke Bogus is also going to be part of the Seattle gang this summer. He's going to be going out there with us.
Yeah, Explorer intern at Microsoft. Yeah, if you would have told me that a year ago, I would have been shaking my head as well.
a marketing major doing an internship at Microsoft. Yeah, it's pretty cool.
Yeah, hype to be coding all summer. That'll be interesting. It'll be fun. I'm excited.
It'll definitely be interesting. So I wanted to have Luke on so that we could all, because us three were on a team for the hackathon. We built a pretty interesting project. And so I kind of wanted to, we've talked about hackathons before, but we'll kind of go over how it works again. And having Luke here, who, this was his first one, he's a little less technical. He can probably explain it really well. And then we will go into talking a little bit about our project and the roles that we all had in it. So, Luke, do you want to kind of recap like what the event was and how you experienced it?
Yeah, how I experienced. So I guess, so we got there in the morning. So it was a 24-hour event. I know hackathons usually are either longer or shorter, but they're usually at least 24 hours. But we got there in the morning, quick introductions, and we kind of just jumped right in. There was really no prompt. I know some hackathons have prompts and like certain things you should abide by, but this was just kind of do a project. So our project was really interesting. I know Jacob, you already had the idea leading up into it, so that definitely helped. We didn't really have to waste any time on what exactly we wanted to do. But yeah, so basically, I guess, do you want me to dive into what the project was now?
Yeah, sure.
Okay, sweet. Yeah, so our main idea was called Link Back, which is pretty much that it's a link shortener, but the primary selling value of it is that you can have very specific information about each click to the link. So basically, every single time somebody clicks the link, you get an email with information such as when the link was clicked, where the link was clicked, and the idea is that there are definitely a lot of link shorteners out there, but you can get a lot of high-level statistics about, like, oh, your link was clicked 10 times, which is sweet. But if they're very specific links, such as your personal website or like your Git repo or something, you want to know basically every single click and where. So that's kind of basically what we built in 24 hours. And by we, I basically mean Andre and Jacob. You guys kill it out there, which is so inspiring to watch you guys just hack out on it all night long.
Yeah. Speaking of hacking, this podcast is called Hacker Slacker, but we've never really explained what hacking truly means when we refer to it. I know we've talked about it slightly on some episodes about this podcast in particular, but the idea of hacking is not quite what you see in the movies. You know, it's not a bunch of people standing around a computer mashing at a keyboard trying to hack the mainframe. Hacking is more of a term used in the computer science community that basically means that you are just making code quickly. You're kind of hacking it together. It's not going to be the best code. It's not going to be super well documented, and it might not like do everything you want it to do, but it works and it kind of gets the functionality done, even if it's not in the best or most efficient way.
Yeah, so like when I told some people about hackathons, they were like, oh, so were you hacking stuff? It's like, well, I was hacking stuff together. I wasn't really like I'm not breaking into the school system to change people's grades like you want me to, but
yeah,
that sort of thing. Yeah, so
that could be the next one we do.
Yeah. So the Bogus kind of walked through like what the idea does, and I just want to give my motivation behind it. Basically, the thought was, like in trying to get internships, you end up applying to like almost hundreds of companies. And so a lot of these forms are pretty much the same. And one of the sections on them is commonly like give links to your social media, give links to your personal site if you have one. And so I have a personal site and I link it every time, but I honestly have no idea if anyone has ever clicked on that link. And so what I want is this project to let me give that application a link, and then I want to know if someone in Cupertino clicks on my link. Like, I want an email, because that's really important information to me and tells me, like, the importance of my personal site, maybe how hard a company was looking into me before they decided that they don't want to hire me, that sort of thing. Yeah.
That happened a lot, it seemed. Anyway.
When we post this podcast, I'll post it with a link back link, so yes. I can see all the information about how many clicks it comes out through Twitter and all that kind of stuff. So hopefully we'll get to see, like, I'm not trying to say we'll see where you guys live, but we'll get to see kind of like a general vibe. I'm assuming a lot of our listeners are from the Midwest and the Nebraska area where we record and where we're from, as well as it'll be really interesting to see how many people actually click the links in our Twitter.
Yeah. So like Linkback right now is kind of in the hack together state that we got after the hackathon. And so I kind of want to go back and kind of go over the interface, make it a little more polished. Obviously, we need to add like a privacy policy when you sign up. Mm-hmm. Just a bunch of little things that maybe didn't make it into our 24-hour thing. But we'll definitely let you guys know when it's in a more polished state, and we'll be posting it everywhere. So look out for that.
Yeah.
And then in terms of the actual hackathon, the interesting part to me was kind of the timeline of the whole thing, because it's like, yeah. there were certain things where it's like, okay, we're moving and grooving, and then there were certain things where it's like, oh we're all watching me try to figure out how to get this thing hosted for 3 hours.
Yeah, I'm literally standing behind Pedicor, just like watching him frantically Google on Stack Overflow to try to figure out what's going on.
Yeah. Bogus is like, so what are you trying to do? And I'm like, it's the same thing I was trying to do 2 hours ago. I don't know how to explain it. I just got to get it done.
Yeah.
So I think with this podcast, what we'll do is we'll make it a little bit more technical, but also try to explain what those technical things mean. So no matter what your level of technical proficiency is, you'll be able to kind of understand what we were doing.
Mm-hmm.
So Petty worked on a lot of the back end, which is essentially all the meat on the bones of the website.
It's like the logic behind the interface.
Yeah. Yeah. So that tells it what to do. It operates the database, all that kind of stuff. Luke and I, we worked together on a lot of the front end and UI. He helped me figure out UI flows, and then he got a lot of the content, like the written content that I did not want to work on. He got that all written up, and it was awesome because then I just had to paste it into an HTML file. So that's basically just all the user-facing things. So, Petty, do you want to tell them a little bit about your interesting setup for the hackathon?
Oh, yeah. So I guess this is just going to be more iPad swooning, but I did the whole thing from my iPad, which was, it was pretty fun. And I have this like setup I've been working on. I think I talked about it on the show where like I have a Raspberry Pi hosted at my house back in Kansas City, and I'll like SSH into it to run, which is just kind of like logging into my Raspberry Pi so I can do more developer-y things than an iPad can regularly do. So the entire time I was actually coding from the iPad, and so the sessions went, we got there at 10, and then we left at around 5. I took a 3-hour break where we were going to dinner and a couple of things we had to go to, and then we were back by 9 and went from 9 to
about
6 in the morning. And I'll fill in some of those gaps later, but one of the cool things about the iPad was I charged it in that 3-hour break, and other than that, it didn't touch a charger the entire time.
So incredible.
Because the battery life is so much better, and I was doing a lot of the computing on the Raspberry Pi back in Kansas City, so it was definitely an interesting setup, and I've actually kind of been a little bit addicted to it. Like, I'm still using it for a lot of the developer-y stuff I have to do for school, and
yeah. Luke, you want to tell us about your tech setup?
Yeah, for sure. Well, I definitely didn't like touch as much code as you all did, but I have a MacBook Pro, but then also my iPad Pro. So when I was doing a lot of the just basic ideas of trying to figure out like what the branding might look like, what the color scheme might look like for the site, I basically just had like my iPad and my Apple Pencil, and I was just like drawing out random ideas on Notabilities, the app is like my main driver for note taking and just like drawing, and a little bit of Procreate as well. But so I had that going, and I was just kind of, you know, on my Mac and just trying to look at a bunch of different logos, a bunch of different websites, a bunch of different color combinations. So I guess it was more so I used the iPad just for like basic drawings. That's kind of how I like get a lot of the ideas down. So I just like, you know, I don't even think about it. I just draw random things. I kind of like let my hand just go, and then sometimes it happens to be really cool ideas. But so I guess I don't know. I guess the main driver was just the Mac, and just looking at just, I don't know, maybe 50 different websites and just a lot of different logos. I typed in like arrow and like links and stuff into Google Images, and I was just scrolling for, you know, a long time to try to get some inspiration. So
Yeah, and I was just using my MacBook Pro. I've talked about the fact that I use it. I don't have an iPad Pro yet.
Need to.
Yeah.
Join the club.
But I just coded on my MacBook Pro. Had a few issues getting some Python set up. We can talk about that a little bit later. but what was really awesome was that we were all on Apple devices. So we have a group chat and iMessage, and then we took notes on just the Notes app in a shared note, kind of like how we talked about what we do for the podcasts. It worked really well.
Yeah, use some AirDrop too.
Yeah. AirDrop was great.
Airdropping files, super nice.
Like dropping Andre some like icons and stuff for the website, and I was like, just turn on AirDrop, and it was really, really smooth flow. It was great.
Yeah. So when we talk about ecosystem, that's why.
Yeah, that's what you pay the big Apple bucks for.
Totally worth it.
Yeah. So I kind of want to go through the timeline of the event as best we can, because obviously it's a bit of a haze. Like it's a 24-hour period. We're not going to cover everything.
Yeah.
So we get to the event, and I don't know about you guys, but there was a lot more people than I was expecting.
Oh, man, there were so many people.
I think they said there was around 125 people.
That's incredible.
And obviously it's winter, so it's like absolutely freezing outside.
There was a snowstorm the night before.
Yeah, there was a snowstorm. So we get in, get into the warmth. The event's on campus in one of the CS buildings. Just kind of, there was a main auditorium where they had some speakers, and then we were spread out across like several lab style classrooms, mm-hmm. just with like bigger desks. And so we get there, they do a little introduction, and then there was the first keynote speaker, and then you're just kind of sent off to the classrooms to get started.
Yeah, so we kind of got a table in a corner by a whiteboard, and we just got to work.
And a window.
And a window.
I need my natural light.
Yeah, I gotta have the natural light.
Yeah, and so we actually spent the first, like, hour or so just kind of trying to find a good name and URL. You know, it's a link shortener. That's a pretty key part of it.
Yeah.
Which sounds stupid to most people, but I'm actually kind of glad we did it because we came up with something pretty good. I think Linkback worked a lot.
Linkback. And Linkback is spelled LNKBA.CC.
Yeah, that's the URL.
Shout out to the Cocos Islands, and a small island territory of Australia that has the .cc domains.
How many people? It was, like, less than 100 people.
It's like
there.
500 people.
500 people
live
there.
It's about 5.4 square miles. Mm-hmm. Huge shout out to them.
Their main source of revenue is the .cc domain.
Yeah. and the LNK instead of LINK for both shortness, and a shout out to Lincoln, the city. LNK is kind of the abbreviation that has come to fruition in the past, I don't know, 5 years or so.
Yeah, the entire name, just like Linkback, we went to that, like, makes my marketing heart happy, like, because Linkback, you know, it's an actual word, and so I wrote down the definition at the event, but I guess the definition of it, it's a method for web authors to obtain notifications when other authors link to one of their documents. So that's like literally what we're doing.
That's exactly what we're doing.
We didn't even know this when we picked the domain, just so you know.
Yeah, it's just incredible, because it's like, it's literally, you get a notification when somebody else clicks on your link, so it's kind of cool, because that's literally what Linkback means. It was available, and then you had a little homage with LNK. Pretty sweet.
Yeah.
Pretty sweet.
Yeah, so once we got that figured out, we just kind of dove in. Like, I started trying to get the scaffolding set up so that Andre and Luke had places to put their work, and you guys started working on, like, I know we worked on the logo a lot, kind of the tagline, that sort of thing.
Yeah, so we used, for a little bit more technical stuff, we used Python with Django. Penny can talk a little bit more about
that's
that.
What I have a lot of experience in. Django, it's like a, so Django, what it is it's a web framework, which is kind of a base to build websites on. And so Django's, it's fairly popular, like it's used by Instagram. And it was, I'm pretty sure it's still like their main backend, but yeah. And Pinterest, I think, is all on Django. So it's pretty cool. It lets me use Python on the back end. And it's what I used in my work experience in the past and the other startup I worked on. So I'm able to move decently quick in Django, which is definitely why I chose it for the hackathon.
Yeah. It worked really nicely because basically he could set up the back end with the Python and it would just shoot templates out at me that I could make look a little better and kind of tune up on the front end, which was awesome because then I didn't have to do the awful part of HTML, which is putting all of the data in there and actually creating the template. So Django was very nice to use.
Yeah, so the way me and Andre worked together was I kind of was handling the back end side and then creating these pages for Andre to fill out with content, but I was handling the data and passing it to Andre to fill out those pages with like the actual information, like the links that are going to be on there, and then he was handling the design of like how the user sees all that data.
Yeah, so it was pretty interesting to work with. I've worked with Jinja, which is, I think that's what Django is a fork of, right?
Yeah, so it's that's kind of the templating system, which is the part where like my data gets inserted into his front end like display code.
So I've worked with Python and Jinja before, but I had never worked with Django. It was really awesome to work with. It made things pretty simple. I worked a lot of CSS, which is cascading style sheets, which doesn't really make any sense as to why it's named that, besides if you don't have much technical knowledge. Basically, it's what makes the front end of websites look pretty. So I worked with a lot of that, and the website looks fine. It could definitely use some revisions, but my code is very bad. It's very hacked together. One of the things with CSS is that you use like ID tags and class tags in your HTML to make it a lot easier to control things and make them look the same. And my tags have really poor naming schemes. They have very poor naming schemes, as well as the fact that they're all kind of scattered all over the place in the code. So that's another thing we'll probably talk about going to fix things up. Yeah. That's definitely something I'll go and refactor.
It's very in the spirit of the hackathon, though, to just kind of throw it together. Like, I mean, on the back end, like, I didn't even really handle security, you know, like... There's a whole set of things you do in Django to make sure, like, no one gets where they're not supposed to go. And I was just kind of like, well, this only has to work for a demo, so who really cares where people can go, you know?
So where were we? We were just talking about getting started.
Yeah, so we got everything rolling, and I think we can just jump ahead towards by dinner. We had, like, a decent foundation working, and I think I told you guys, like, there was a chance we could get it all done by dinner. Yeah. And by the time we got there, we realized there is not a chance in hell that we were going to get this done by dinner.
Yeah.
Which, I mean, that's pretty common in software engineering to underestimate the amount of time something's going to take, but I missed it by a wide margin.
By about 13 hours.
No, it was hilarious because, like, leading up to the event, we were talking before we really talked to you or talked to Andre about coming on the team, and Jacob's like, oh, yeah, like, this would be pretty easy. I mean, we'll start at, like, 11, and then we can all go to dinner and then just kind of call it a day.
Yeah, I was like,
call it a day.
I was like, yeah, it's pretty simple. Like, I don't know why it would take that long. And then, I don't know. So, yeah, post-dinner, it was just, you know, the break was nice. But, like, 2 hours after the break, you just kind of were back in the haze of, like, okay, I've been sitting at this table for what feels like the entire day.
Yeah.
I'm maybe not the sharpest, like, just kind of making dumb mistakes and not solving them in smart ways. So I was just kind of dug into a hole between the hours of about 1 and 4 in the morning. And that's when I was working on, like, getting the website so that people could see it across the internet. And that's just kind of stuff that's, like, not really programming, more just, like, working with different, like, hosting services and... It was whack.
Yeah. Luke and I had some Python issues earlier in the night, so we weren't even able to host it locally on our computers, which was a whole mess. That took me about an hour to resolve on my own.
And that was a mess.
Luke ran into it later.
Yeah, I ran into it a lot later. It was basically the same issues, but it's kind of funny. So, like, as someone who, like, doesn't have, like, that much technical knowledge, I guess, so you came over to my computer, and you were like, oh, like, let me give it a shot. And, like, I just, like, watched just, like, in awe for 10 minutes. Because, like something would come up on the terminal, and you copy and paste it into Google, and then you click on the first link, and then you just, like, copy and paste whatever command you could find, paste it, and there'd be another error, and then you do it all over again. Yeah. And just, like, I guess as someone who doesn't really have a whole lot of just, like, strict software engineering, like, experience, like, that was interesting to see if that's how you problem solve. Like, a lot of it, for me and, like, my minimal experience has been just, like, oh, sit, write it out, try to think about it, like, maybe ask someone. But it was a very proactive, like, you know, let's just hurry about it, and eventually I'll come across the solution. So, a lot of errors, but it was still actually a big learning experience just to watch you figure it out.
One of the best ways to debug is just Google your error codes, because a lot of times they don't make any sense, and there's something on Stack Overflow that makes way more sense, or just fixes it.
Yeah, I mean, I think people don't realize how much of, like, actually building things is just randomly Googling. Because, like, if you're building stuff, there's a really good chance you don't know every aspect of what you're going to be
doing. Something's going to break.
Yeah, and in computer science, it's, like, the easiest field in the world to just, like, if you have a decent understanding of it, you can just look at what other people have to say. Like, if you're having a problem, 1,000 people have had it before, and one of them posted a really good solution to it that the other 99 looked at. So, I mean, there's, like, every step of development is, like, okay, now I need to build this part. Well, if this is something that I haven't been doing over the last week, I'll just look up how I would build that part. So it's just, you're working with, like, the infinite knowledge of the internet every step of the way.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Google is a programmer's best friend. Not trying to be a homer here, but it really is.
Seriously. We're biased, are we?
Okay, so then, Jacob, you can talk a little bit about your decision that you had to make late into the night on what you were going to do hosting wise.
Oh, well, you mean with the subdomains?
Not that, but with restarting the...
Yeah, so basically, to explain the problem that I was having for 3 hours with hosting, the first hour, I think I spent mostly trying... Because basically when you host something, you have to deliver it to the server in a way that the server knows exactly what to do with it. And there's a lot of things that a server has to do that you don't have to do when you're just developing stuff locally. For example, like static files, like pictures aren't loaded in the same way. And just the whole concept of like, oh, I'm going to throw this thing up locally on my machine is different than, oh, I'm going to throw this thing up on something that exposes itself to the public internet, because there's a lot more requirements and it has to be basically a lot more strict about the way it handles your software for security reasons. And so... when I was trying to take the code that we had already written and put it on the hosting service I wanted to use that I'd used in the past called Heroku, they have a pretty good free tier. What was happening was Heroku was saying like, okay, I see your code, I'm going to start building it, but I can't get past this step. And I'm like, okay, why can't you get past this step? Well, it's a bunch of Googling. And I figured out the reasons were just like Python version issues. And that's one of my least favorite parts about Python is it's not super easy to just like bundle up your application and send it somewhere. You have to also keep track of like, oh, which version is it using and which requirements does it have and how are you going to install those. And so Heroku actually handles that stuff pretty well, but they only run certain versions of Python. So I was like, okay, now let me try to run let me try to migrate our project to the versions that they use. And I guess, I don't know, I have no idea how much people are going to be able to follow along with this, so I'm just going to keep going for the people who can.
I'm a little lost.
Basically, I mean, okay, so there's different versions of different programming languages. They get updated, right? And sometimes you have to change the way you code depending on which version you're in. And so the version on my computer was different than the versions that the hosting services allowed. So I'm like, okay, let me try to get the version on my computer working so I can see why it won't run, to see what the incompatibility issues are. Well, I think it turned out that that was the wrong way to approach it in the first place, but in doing so, I ended up wasting an hour on my machine, not realizing it was in the state that it was, and just kind of, it's like super deep in the weeds, but basically my Python, the path to, when I typed in Python, my interpreter was taking it somewhere I didn't think it was taking it, and so I was trying to figure out how to put it back, and the whole reason was because I was in a virtual machine. Okay, now I'll step back a little bit to something people might understand. After I got out of that massive rabbit hole, which was probably like an entire hour, I realized that the problem was one of the requirements that our project has was just this weird thing that occurred because of the system I was using, and it wouldn't work on Heroku. And basically, I should have just Googled the exact output that it was giving me a lot earlier, because when I did that, I saw this, was able to delete that requirement, and then it ran most of the way. So I got down to another step that was a problem. And so basically, after that step, I was having problems with like more intense stuff that I didn't really know how to solve, and that no matter what I changed, it didn't really work, and no matter how hard I thought about it, it didn't really work. So I had to go to the like Heroku documentation, and they give these starter templates, which is like a blank app that works with their system, which is where we should have started if we knew we were going to host this. But we didn't start there. We just started kind of the place I always start, which is just a blank project. And so I was like, okay, what if I just downloaded the starter project and then manually migrated all of our code onto the starter project, renaming things from like the template stuff to our stuff as it goes and copying the code over. And I think I did that in about like 40 some minutes. And then after that, it worked pretty much flawlessly. So that ended up being the solution, but it was a very long journey to get there.
Yeah. I was sitting there for like 3 hours, just kind of watching him. I was doing some front end tuning. I got a few things done and I just looked over and he was in the zone. And then eventually he just sent me a link, and he's like, all right, I need you to just copy all the front-end files straight into this Heroku repo. And so I did, and then it worked.
It was not in a pretty state. Or I was not in a pretty state.
I don't think Petticord blinked.
Yeah, I was not in a very, like, cheerful mood. Like, you guys would ask me, like, oh, like, can I help you with anything? Like, oh, what is it? Just, like, just shut up. Just let me do it. I'm fighting the machine. Don't talk to me. It's me versus the machine right now.
I think it's interesting, because it's just, like, that entire story to me was a lot about, like, what a Pacathon was all about. I think no matter the scope of people's project, like, some people were making, like, just, like, video games. People were making, like, tic-tac-toe boards and, like, totally different scopes. But I think everyone just ran into, like, some groundbreaking issue. And I think it's just really interesting, like, with time not on your side and, like, no matter the scale of issue, like, I don't know. It's just really cool to kind of see people attack the issues no matter what it is. So, like, it might have taken 2 hours, but the ultimate, I think, outcome is that you figured it out. I think that that's, like, what hackathons promote in the first place, which was just really, really, really cool to be a part of.
For sure, yeah. I mean, one of the most rewarding things about a hackathon is, like, oh, if I was having that issue in a normal development setting, I would have just said, okay, I'll take a step back, work on this tomorrow. But instead it forces you to, like, you're fighting the machine for 3 hours straight, like, you know you got to get this done before a certain amount of time, and there's so much, crunch. So there is, like, a total, like, adrenaline rush of, like, actually figuring it out. And while maybe, like, from a good software development perspective, my time would have been better spent just, like, taking a break and doing it the next day if I could. Like, the pressure and the rush is, like, definitely one of the most rewarding parts of, like, the actual hackathon.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then from there, we basically put a few more things together, got the domain name server running, which basically allows the domain name to connect to the actual hosting. So when you go to lnkba.cc, it actually takes you to our website. So we got that fixed. Not fixed per se, but working. We put together a few more front-end things. We got the last few back-end things tuned up. And then it was 6 a.m.
Yeah, we had it pretty much demo ready. And so, I mean, we had the choice of, like, okay, we could work on this thing that maybe isn't necessary to our core, but, like, it would be nice to have. And I basically was just like, yeah, no, like, I need to go to bed.
Yeah. So, Jacob and I got about 3 hours of sleep. Luke maybe got 4.
Yeah, I got a little bit more to prep for that crazy pitch that we had, even though it really wasn't much at all.
Well, yeah, I remember it was, like, 5, and Bogus was like, yeah, I think I might go to bed. Like, I'm really just cheerleading here. And I was like, yeah, I mean, like, there's nothing I can ask you to do.
Yeah. So I can't really, like, jump in, just, like, help you code. It doesn't really, yeah.
I was like, I need you for the pitch tomorrow. Like, you got to be on it. And then he was like, yeah, well, I'm really just, like, waving my pom-poms here.
Yeah.
That's literally what I was doing. But it was fun nonetheless. And I think that's, like, one, interesting, like, perspective as, like, somebody who didn't have a lot of contributions with the coding is that for me, like, maybe it's just, like, my business-minded, I don't know, but it's just, like, really hard for me to think within the scope of 24 hours. Like, a lot of the ideas that I had and a lot of, like, the ways I thought things should go or, like, maybe that I saw them going were, like, oh, we should do this feature and we should add this feature. And then, like, Jacob always had to be, like, or Andre was, like, yeah, like, that's a sweet idea, but we have to do this in, like, 6 hours, dude. So I think a lot of it for me was just, like, kind of, like, taking a step back and realizing, all right, like, what's, like, the bare minimum here? And just kind of, like, so a lot of it was just me cheerleading and just trying to figure out, like, where their brains were going, because mine was already thinking, like, weeks down the road, months down the road. Because I think that's one thing in general that was super interesting is I thought our project, compared to most, was one of the only projects that could definitely last beyond just the hackathon. I think a lot of other people had really hacky projects and things that were, like, super cool, don't get me wrong, but they were just, like, cool projects that you just, like, put in your repo and you're like, oh, I did this one time. But I think ours can be, like, something that we could monetize someday, just maybe it's, like, kind of, like, let sit, have people use. I feel like that's not a lot of projects were like that. So that was something I'm really proud that we did.
A lot of the projects that you see at hackathons are, like, interesting technical feats, because if you give your normal programmer time to just work on whatever they want, they're probably going to take it to just solve some interesting technical problem. Mm-hmm. But I think what we're more focused on is, like, business ideas and, like, what can you do in an MVP in 24 hours? Because, like, the ideas that I'm obsessed with aren't, like, oh, how am I gonna, like mess with this stream of raw audio data? It's more like, oh, like, can I make this into a viable business? Yeah. You know? So, and one of the things you touched on that I think is, like, the most important lesson I learned in my first hackathon that I was extremely firm about on this one is it's, like, I like ideating and it's super cool and we can talk about it in our pitch, but we need to establish, like, what is the minimum we need to have done to look decent in front of the judges.
Yeah.
And that was, like, pretty much all we finish.
Yeah, the whole hackathon is a really interesting case study in minimum viable product, MVP. We've probably said this before, talked a little bit about MVP, minimum viable product. We've talked to some startup people, and they've probably mentioned it, but it's basically like, what is the bare minimum that you can put out where you will have a product that can be used and is what you want it to do, and it has that functionality, but it is bare minimum, bare bones. It's just got the exact features you need it, nothing added, no added sweeteners. It's just the bare project. So we got to really experience that firsthand. There were a few things that we wanted to do. We wanted to do some customization where you could add a few things to the domain a little differently. We wanted to also have you be able to delete links. That's something that's probably not going to take us very long, but it's just something we didn't add because we don't need it for demo. Also, Jacob was able to manipulate the database manually in between demos, so it wasn't a huge deal.
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely a great study in MVPs, and I think it's a good experience for people to have, just like, how can you cut down your idea to its essentials for you to like consider it a success almost. So I definitely valued that part of it. Now we should talk a little bit about the morning after when we did our judging experience.
Yeah, yikes.
Yeah, so we got back with very few hours of sleep, and we set up, and essentially we had two rounds of two judges come around and look at our product. They asked us to talk about it, so we talked about it. Luke, you want to talk a little bit about how we pitched our product?
Yeah, definitely. So basically the frame of the pitch is we only had 3 minutes. So I think that's one thing like originally coming in, at least I thought, I don't know if you guys thought, but I thought it was gonna be like, you know, in front of the crowd, maybe like 5 minutes, maybe have like a little like short slide deck. But it was very much like these very code heavy individuals who were judging us, and we had 3 minutes to pitch. So basically the way we framed it is we kind of just gave like a, basically like a persona, I guess, like from a customer standpoint. Jacob, you talked a lot about just like the experience you talked about earlier about applying to jobs and how I didn't know if I was getting seen. So that was the frame that we had, and then we basically jumped right into the demo. So basically we walked right through a live demo. It wasn't just a mock-up, it's actually hosted, like Andre mentioned earlier. And so we created an account, we created a link, we had Jacob click the link, and then all within that minute, or within those 3 minutes, Andre did get an email saying that the link was clicked. So we went through the entire process, had a little bit of time at the end to talk about how we differentiate ourselves between other link shortening platforms and kind of like how ours is better and different. So it was really quick. It was kind of crazy, again, because there's a lot of things that, like, I know I wanted to say, but and while they might have sounded like really sexy, they weren't really essential. And so that was just, it was really good proponent back into the MVP style, just same with like, how can you sway someone that you have the best project in 3 minutes, but also proving all the hard work that you did over the last 24 hours.
Yeah, it was definitely a lot of technical speak mixed in with like, oh yeah, there was a problem that we tried to solve. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's tough. It definitely was not a business-oriented hackathon. Like, when you looked at the winners, you know, there wasn't really anything where you would look at that and be like, oh, that's a sustainable product. It's like, oh, they solved a really hardcore technical problem. One guy made a really cool game. Other people had, like, there was a farm one that maybe people liked it because it was corn-related.
Corn hacks.
Corn hacks, yeah.
I don't know. But at the end of the day, we really feel like we were robbed and that we had the best project.
I did insider info. I will not disclose the person who shared this information. I share it with you, Andre. But I did receive a text after the fact saying that upon looking at the judges sheet, we were very, very close to placing.
Interesting.
So very slim margins, I was told. But the person that gave me the information remains confidential.
Interesting. Well, looks like we blew it on the pitch. Yeah.
So it's my fault. That's fine. Yeah. All right.
Yeah, we'll definitely have to try to go to some more hackathons.
I'm pumped.
It was a good time, and we'll hopefully be working more on some Linkback stuff.
Yeah, we'll definitely update you guys on Linkback. Just to put it out there, I haven't really talked to you guys about it, but like, hopefully my goal would be to have like a thing that we can send people to by the time the podcast releases next week.
Yeah, that would be great. Do you guys have anything else about the hackathon?
Not really. I think that's it for me. I think I'm finally caught up on my sleep from it.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, I don't really have much other input other than it was a great experience. I think being someone who didn't really see themselves as very technical, I still didn't feel like I had a lot of technical input, but it was still just really awesome just, like, to watch basically you two just, like, hack away at it and just kind of be a part of the ideation process and just being able to balance, like, all these great, wonderful ideas in the future with just getting the core functionality done in 24 hours. I think that was just a great first experience. So, yeah, it was a lot of fun with you guys.
Yeah. Huge thanks to Corn Hacks and the organizers. It was a really good event. Ton of people showed up. They handled all the extra people really well. It was an awesome time. I can't wait for next year and for some more hackathons. Thanks for listening to the pod this week. You can contact us with comments, questions, whatever you have to say on Twitter at HackersPod, or you can email us at hackerslackerpod@gmail.com. We'd love to hear from you guys, and we will see you next week.
Yeah, thanks for listening.
Peace. Bye.